it's also forced us to rethink every other part of our business, from our offering and our menu to the actual experience in our physical restaurants, to how we operate, to our supply chain, to our team member experience. So we're definitely looking 6 and 12 months ahead and really thinking about how we can start to build, you know, build back and come out of this even stronger.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Today, on my first actual quarantine recorded podcast, my guest is Nick Jamet, the founder of Sweetgreen. Nick and a couple of his friends were looking for better food options while students at Georgetown University, and they found it, but only after creating it on their own. Sweetgreen is the first ever unicorn salad startup, luring lunchtime lines across the country. It's grown tremendously over the past several years. Steve Case, the billionaire and Sweetgreen investor, once said, "If I had told you 25 years ago, when Starbucks only had a few locations, that someday it would be a global phenomenon, nobody would have believed that. But that's what happened. And so, that's what we feel with Sweetgreen." There is no doubt, after speaking with Nick, that Sweetgreen might just become the Starbucks of salad. As a regular customer of Sweetgreen and a huge fan of the brand, I was really excited to sit down with Nick. I knew he had grown up in New York City and that his parents owned a well-known fine dining restaurant where he learned about the business throughout his childhood. So I started there.
I did. I'm born and raised in New York, and I grew up in the hospitality industry. Growing up my whole life, my parents had restaurants, and even before that, my family was in the hotel business. And so from an early age, I understood what it meant to run a business and the blood, sweat, and tears that it required, and just watched my parents live that life and build a family while doing it. So, you know, I have a lot of love for New York, and my heart is there, and I can't wait to get back there.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's crazy just how much has changed here in the past couple months, and especially with restaurants. And I will tell you, I live right across the street from your location here on 75th and Amsterdam. And, you know, I've seen a lot of the delivery people lining up to take out, but I miss seeing, walking by and seeing a packed Sweetgreen and lines always out the door. How, with restaurants and what's happened now, what's the vision? What's the plan once we get through this to come back?
You know, I think it's really sad to see the decimation that's happened in the restaurant industry. And, you know, some of my favorite restaurants and chefs and just places I used to eat might be forever changed. And it's been great to see some restaurants quickly evolve and pivot their business model and start serving meal kits or pantry or grocery. And so I really admire the resilience and the fast evolution that's required in any time like this. So, you know, I think some people have been able to do that and go into survival mode. But it is scary to think about the landscape and what it's going to look like at the end of this and when we slowly come out of this and even what that looks like. And for those that do make it, the experience will be different. Customers are going to be different. There's no going back to normal. That normal is going to look like something else. But ultimately, that just requires evolution and adaptation. And so I do think there will be opportunity for certain restaurants to just reinvent themselves and create something new at the end of this.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, especially as we talk about restaurants and seeing the effects on these restaurants here, it's really been devastating. And for you and for Sweetgreen and moving forward, have you guys started to really look ahead 6 months, 12 months, and really start to kind of figure out what you believe it's going to look like coming out of this?
You know, it's hard to know exactly what it's going to look like, but we have spent a lot of time scenario planning and trying to build the business we want to build and maybe bring that reality in a little closer. For years, we've been investing in our digital relationship with the customer and building our app and that digital model. And so this crisis has just, you know, pushed us to move to a digital only model. So if anything, it's pushed our business to be more digital. So obviously, it's also forced us to rethink every other part of our business, from our offering and our menu to the actual experience in our physical restaurants, to how we operate, to, you know, our supply chain, to our team member experience. So we're definitely looking 6 and 12 months ahead and really thinking about how we can start to build back and come out of this even stronger. But ultimately, we're also just trying to think about the next couple months and just understand what type of experience we need to build for the customer and the team member.
And I want to go and go through the story, but before I do that, I want you to speak about what I was super impressed with, what I've seen from you guys and read about, is you guys didn't really just off the bat, it seems like right when this happened, you weren't thinking, how are we going to survive? You guys really got involved with helping people on the front lines and just amazing. I've seen it up close here in New York, but can you just talk about that decision to, like, you have a major $1 billion business and you guys have to figure out how to make it work and survive now. But you guys really turned your attention to doing a lot with folks on the front line, with Jose Andres and some others. Can you just talk about what that decision was like and to do that? And was there any hesitation?
You know, again, going back to when this all started a couple months ago, we didn't know how long this would last. We didn't know what this would look like. But what we did know is that there would be folks on the front lines really putting their lives out there and to help those that are affected. And so we quickly realized part of our business needed to shift to support them. And so our whole business model completely changed overnight. And, you know, we had a business model that had many channels, and one of those which was a channel called Outpost, which delivered meals to offices and shelves that we would set up in different locations, like office buildings or residential buildings, and would do group delivery. And so we had a whole sales team, a logistics team. And ultimately, we have this greater engine of, you know, kitchens and restaurants all over the country, farmers, a supply chain network that we've built. So when our business starts to drop overnight, part of our intention was to keep that engine going and also to be able to serve as many of those folks on the front lines as we could. And so pretty early on in the crisis, we pivoted a large part of our team to just serving medical staff and hospital staff. And, you know, we got it up and running within 48 hours, actually. We put out a message out to, you know, on our social channel saying, we want to feed hospital workers and medical staff for free. Let us know where you are. And we got 11,000 requests from hospitals and medical staff groups overnight. And so little by little, we started serving them and pivoting our volume and capacity to serve them. And now in the last, you know, since that started, we've served over 250,000 meals for free.
250,000.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, that's got to make you feel good. And just what you guys have done, and what I've always noticed just about your brand ethos and just how you guys always operated, that to me would kind of be typical of Sweetgreen. Starting out your business, though, and going back, can you tell us the story of how it came about? Because you were in college, right?
Yes, we were students at Georgetown University. That's where I met Jonathan and Nathaniel, my two co-founders and partners. And we all met there as students. And John was actually the first person I met my freshman year. He was in the dorm room right next door to me. And we quickly became friends and really bonded over food. And, you know, we were both very passionate about food. And, you know, we had a friendship over the years, and same with Nate. And John and Nate actually met in their first class freshman year in accounting class. So we all kind of met in the beginning freshman year and stayed friends. And towards the end of our career and senior year at Georgetown, we saw everyone going and applying for these banking jobs or investment consulting. And it just didn't feel right for us. We all grew up with parents that were entrepreneurs and immigrants, and we saw them build businesses and work for themselves. And we wanted to do the same. So as we looked around, we also had this constant kind of problem every day in our lives around what we were eating and the options we had. The dining room and cafeteria on campus wasn't optimal. And there were some great restaurants in Georgetown, but none that made you feel really good after you ate, or none that had some sort of transparency or clean food. Or there was never we looked around and there wasn't any food that was healthy with an experience that you wanted to be part of and that was accessible. So we said, we should create this. We should create a place where you can get that kind of food, but also make an experience that people want to opt into.
Now, you know about the restaurant business from growing up in it. And I always have so much admiration. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of different businesses, but the ones I find that I have the most admiration for really are restaurateurs. It's just such a difficult business. I mean, you are constantly on. It really is a 24/7 business. You knew this. You knew this, but yet you still wanted to do something in food.
I grew up in the food industry, but my parents ran a very different type of restaurant.
It was fine dining.
Fine dining to the max. And to your point, that is a very specific life. It's, there wasn't one guest that came into the restaurant that my parents didn't greet themselves. They were there 24/7 and they ran it that way in a very special way. So as much as I had experience in that part of the hospitality community, what we were building was something a little different. So, I definitely learned a lot from my parents and saw how they led with a sense of hospitality and food quality and all those things. But the model and the business model we were building was different. So I didn't really know much about that end of the spectrum in terms of food. And so the three of us really, went in with not much knowledge, but we went in with a problem we were trying to solve for our own lives and the community around us. And we went in with a vision to change, people's access to food.
I love that. So you guys come up with this, you lamenting about the food and service and just what you're able to get. And you come up with this idea to do this. And a lot of people sit around, they come up with ideas. But then how did you actually just take those first steps into making this into a real business?
So the first step was writing a business plan. So the three of us had taken a class at Georgetown called Entrepreneurship with Professor Will Finnerty. And he was an adjunct professor who taught just that one class. And it was the only course really the only entrepreneurship course at the time. And so in that class, they teach you how to write a business plan and how to reach out to other entrepreneurs and how to think about building a business model. And so after we'd all taken the class separately, we decided to write this business plan and put it on paper. And around the corner from where we lived our senior year was this little green and white 560 square foot shack that had sat empty for a few years. So we said, let's rent that out and let's build it there. And we went and met with the landlord. She actually, an amazing woman named Marcy Simon, wouldn't take our calls for 30 days. My co-founder John called her every day for 30 days. She finally responded and said, I'll take a meeting if you stop calling me.
That's great.
And so we finally met her and she looked at the business plan and said, come back with a real business plan. I think at the time it was a couple pages. She said, come back with a real business plan, go meet this architect and then we can talk. We did that. We came back and I guess she saw something in us or believed in the vision and, had not much to lose. No one else was going to rent this 560 square foot concrete box. So she agreed to lease us the space.
That's great. So you finally get the space. There's a lot of costs involved. I mean, startup cost and then actually taking it from getting the space to the next steps. How did you do that? Did you divide responsibilities? Did you focus on one thing or another?
In the beginning, it was kind of all of us doing everything. We would definitely divide and conquer. But in the beginning of starting a business, you all have to be involved in every part of it. And it was all new to us. It was very exciting, whether it was from hiring the contractor to designing the restaurant to figuring out the menu. We definitely all had our areas that we were in control of, but we were, all in on all of it. And back to the point before about the three of us didn't really know anything about building a restaurant or running a fast casual restaurant. So the fact that we didn't know we were getting into really helped us, because if we had known all the challenges, we would have made some very different decisions. We would have built it very differently. And I'm not sure that would have been a better thing. We thought it would cost us 150 grand and we could open it pretty quickly. It ended up costing us double that amount and double.
It's so hard. But what you just said there is really so true. And I hear a lot of entrepreneurs talk about it. If we knew something else, or if we had had that experience, or it would have been completely different. It might not even have succeeded. And it sounds like you had that same situation. And fortunately, you didn't. So you guys just kept going at it from what you wanted to do. And what was that? What was your vision initially? What was that? What we all know now as Sweetgreen, what was that? Was that vision there at the very beginning?
In a broader sense, it definitely was. And I look back at some of the decisions we made in that early, even the first restaurant. And, so much of our menu and experience and product has evolved to something completely different today. But the vision and the purpose and the problem we're trying to solve are all the same. And I look back at that first restaurant, the fact that we picked that location, a site we wouldn't even drive by today. It was 560 square feet with no utilities, no running water, no electricity. We would never try to build that today. We would never take a site that small. The fact that we opened with a certain menu, sourcing from the places we were sourcing. We opened with no soda. We opened with compostable packaging. We opened with kind of going against a lot of the rules that you saw in every fast casual model. So the fact that we didn't have the playbook or didn't know it's really important to serve soda because it's huge chunk of your profit margin comes from there. And we knew that Soda was very profitable, but ultimately we were trying to build a very different business model. And so, but we didn't really have, we weren't risk, there was nothing else at stake. You know, we were a restaurant that had been in business and Soda was part of your menu. It's a lot easier to start without it than to remove that from your P&L or move it from your profit center. So starting from scratch with that vision and those ideals and lack of experience, I think really helped us in the beginning.
Yeah, no, it's amazing that sometimes that having being naive about something and jumping into it and can really help you. So you guys do that. You jump into this. You had just graduated. Is that right? Or
we were still seniors at the time. So we were in our senior year, running between classes, sharing this business plan with everyone. We had made t-shirts that said Sweet Green. It was like the first thing we did. And we ended up raising $300,000 from about 50 or 60 different people, friends and professors and, you know, anyone that would listen to us.
I love it. Those people are probably really happy today that they made that investment, I am sure. So you raise $300,000, you get the business going, you guys are all in, and I have to imagine you faced some major challenges. What were some of those initial major challenges? Were there any that actually you thought may have ended the business prematurely?
In the early days, as we were building Sweetgreen, we definitely had a lot of challenges along the way, whether it was, you know, our needing to spend double to build it out than we thought, delays. But ultimately, we were so confident in what we were building because, again, we were building it for ourselves. And sometimes we look back and say, you know what, we almost had more confidence in that location than any other location because we were the customer. We're building this for ourselves, for our community, for our friends. We knew that Georgetown needed it. What we quickly started to realize was that this was a bigger problem outside of Georgetown. This is something that DC needed, that the rest of the country needed and food needed to evolve. But early on, you know, we had challenges every single day and it's how we learned.
Yeah. So take me through that. You launched this restaurant. There's a big change from having one place, let's say, to then having multiple locations. When was it? What was the timing of you guys saying, hey, you know what? This is working out. Was there a time and is that why you started and looked to build other locations?
In the beginning, when we first wrote the business plan, the intent was always to open more. And I think early on, we defined that idea of scale as, oh, maybe we could get to 10 of these in DC. And over time, as Sweetgreen came to life and we saw the value it created for our customers and guests and how people were connecting with it, we said, you know, this can be much bigger. And so the, you know, how we defined scale has constantly changed over the last 13 years. But within that first year, there were moments where we thought the business wouldn't make it to even our 1 year anniversary. And there were moments where we thought this could be huge. And we always went back and forth between those moments. The first winter for us, you know, opening a 560 square foot salad and frozen yogurt shop in the dead of winter with no seats, we learned wasn't a very good idea. In the winter, at least. And it forced us to evolve the future model to make sure that we were more resilient for seasonality. But that first winter was really tough. There were moments where we almost ran out of money and we almost didn't make it. But it forced us to really do two things, to really understand how to run the business in a really lean way and just think about our whole cost structure. And but B, most importantly, just think about how to evolve the business model. So even in, you know, that was in month, we opened in August. In month four, we were already planning this evolution. So even though the business was a newborn, we're already evolving everything from the menu to the format to, you know, what the next location needed to look like. And so from day one, we've been big believers in constant evolution.
Do you think that's one of the reasons that you guys have been so successful is being able to evolve and being able to change once you learn something?
I think so. You know, as I look back at the 13 years, I think our ability to evolve and adapt, that sense of adaptability was ingrained in us. And because we started without much experience or knowledge, we were constantly trying to learn and be curious about what was working, what wasn't. And so it forced us to really lean into that change and that adaptability. And then secondly, I think most importantly is from the beginning, we always tried to have a very close connection to the customer, to really listen to them and understand them. And A, that built a really strong sense of community around the brand. But we realized early on, especially, you know, in the first 5 years, that the food landscape was obviously changing, but that the customer was changing, their needs were changing. And that for us to successfully grow and meet the needs of the customer, we have to really understand them. And so even as I think about some of our earliest investments in technology and thinking about how to remove friction from the whole food experience and create a more convenient way to get your food. That was all just us listening and trying to understand the customer.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have done an incredible job at that, and just from the process and walking into a Sweetgreen and how smooth it is from start to finish. And going back a few months and looking at a Sweetgreen, and I worked down last year down on Broadway here in Manhattan, or in the 30s, you have a location there. There were lines last summer completely out the door, people waiting on those lines. It's amazing to me. And then I'd be like, who's going to do that? And then I would just go jump on the line because it was just so good. The food was so good. It was so fresh. But did you have that? Did that happen, those types of lines at your initial restaurant? Did you realize, was there that major demand for you before you went on and started to create other locations?
In the beginning in DC, there was. I think the brand really started to take off, and we saw customers really connect with this idea of having access to this kind of food that was fresh and transparent and clean and made you feel really good after you ate it, but also importantly was connected to this broader brand experience that people felt good. We looked around in the beginning, and aside from it being hard to find healthy food that made you feel good, none of that food was generally like that craveable or was attached to a cool brand. And so much of it for us was, as to simply put it, we thought that healthy food had kind of a branding problem. And we wanted to create an experience around food that was good for you that made it the option people just chose to, people wanted to be part of that experience, regardless of it being healthy or not.
Would you say that? I mean, you brought up something extremely interesting, especially myself being always in the experience business. You know, I always looked at, you go to Starbucks and you buy a cup of coffee, and coffee beans as a commodity are a couple cents, but you go in there and you pay $5 for a cup of coffee because you're really buying an experience. And do you feel as Sweetgreen, it's like you just said, it's very similar. You're buying an experience as opposed, I mean, you're buying great healthy food. That's part of it. But do you think it, what's helped you be so successful is really that experience that you're selling that people want to be part of now within their lifestyles?
I do. And I think even before that, it all starts with the food and the supply chain. From an early point, we really were clear to try to build a different supply chain and connect with, you know, many of the farmers that you find in your favorite fine dining or sit down restaurants. And we wanted to bring those ingredients and that food into a more accessible environment. So I think early on, we had a lot of trust from our customers around the type of food and ingredients we were starting with. And I think ultimately that's the most important thing. You know, we can have a great design, a great experience, a great app, but ultimately if customers don't trust the food or don't feel good about where it's coming from or how it tastes, and ultimately the product is what gets people to come back. So
yeah, I mean, I love walking in and seeing the board and seeing where everything was sourced from. And that to me is that moment where I'm like, you know what? I'm eating in a really good place if they're sourcing from these local farmers, and not just one or two. It's everything, it seems like, is specific to each product.
And that, you know, that board's been a really important part of how we share our transparency and about our food. And I remember very vividly the first time we put that board up was in our third or fourth restaurant, I think in Logan Circle in DC. And it was 2009 and we put it up, and, you know, or 2010, and customers, a lot of people were like, why are you putting that up? People don't care about that in fast food. No one needs to know where the stuff comes from. And so people thought we were crazy. And now you look around and it's pretty standard for most any place to share where their food comes from. So it's been exciting to see that customers just wanting more of that information. But ultimately for us, it's just been about this commitment to transparency. So it's not only, if you look at that, our source board, it doesn't just share all of the really cool, exciting local farmers that we're working with and, you know, that are sourcing the peaches that are at peak season and all these really exciting ingredients that we celebrate. It's kind of everything. It's really celebrating that our, you know, our rice comes from this amazing organic farm in California, that our olive oil comes from California, really celebrating all the sources of pretty much all the ingredients. So it's not just about the highlighted ingredients. It's making sure that we feel that we're sharing all of the transparency around our full supply chain.
Yeah, I think that's been a big part of that transparency, has been a big reason why people have really related to your brand. I know one of the things you guys got involved very early on as well that I think was super different was you guys got involved in really creating different experiences like your music festival. And how did, I could tell you're a huge music guy because behind you, you got the music posters there, you know, I see it. But was that from you? Was that your idea, or how did that come about?
You know, it was something that came about pretty organically when we opened our second Sweetgreen. So, you know, we opened the first Sweetgreen in Georgetown, very small, learned a lot of lessons that we needed to evolve, took all those lessons and built them into our second location. It was much bigger. It had seats. The menu was a little broader. It was located at the biggest farmer's market in DC, right on DuPont Circle. And we thought it was going to crush it from day one. And we opened our doors and crickets, almost no customers. And we realized that we were kind of on the wrong side of the street. We were on a very big street, Connecticut Avenue, but all the business was on the other side of the street. We literally had, we were the first business to open on this other side. And so it hit us like, we have to figure out how to connect with customers and figure out this idea of, you know, marketing. How do we think about community marketing and just connecting with the customers that were there? And so my co-founder, Nate, is very, very deeply into music. And we thought like, what if we just started like creating some energy around our side of the street? Let's go buy a speaker. Nate went to Guitar Center, bought a speaker. We put it outside the restaurant and we just started blasting music. Nate would DJ. We were sampling food and we were just trying to get some energy and get people to A, know that we were there and then come meet us and introduce ourselves and learn about Sweetgreen. And it sounds silly, but it you know, we did it every weekend and it started to work. Business picked up, customers knew we were there, and they started to connect with us and learn about Sweetgreen. And that led into us then doing a block party in the parking lot behind the restaurant with 800 people, Vince Hot Chip to come DJ. And that turned into, you know, the year after that, we said, let's really expand this and make it a real festival and create this experience that connects food and music and gets people really excited about that connection. And so we did it at Merriweather Post Pavilion and somehow convinced the Strokes to come play. And we went from 800 people in a parking lot to 13,000 people sold out at Merriweather. And again, the whole time taking over concessions and replacing it with all of our farmers and our food and other restaurateurs and chefs that were creating similar food with all these amazing ingredients. And so you could be at this music festival listening to the Strokes or Phoenix or Kendrick Lamar and eating like local oysters or like an amazing like kale salad or a quinoa bowl, and just understanding that you could have this amazing intersection of food and music at a really enjoyable experience.
No, I think that's such a genius idea. And it, you know, when you think about it and just myself being in the experiential business and building experience like that, food and music together are a really strong combination. And it seems like that's really worked for you guys.
More from our guest, but first a word from our sponsors. We all know that the work you do matters, no matter where you do it from. And nowadays, we are all doing it from a lot of different places. The good news is, I know a trusted company called WebEx. WebEx provides simple and reliable video communication tools that will allow you and your team to connect and collaborate securely. WebEx can take care of business anywhere you are. And no one doing business right now can afford to have their video conference bombed or their privacy compromised. WebEx is perfect as it allows you to work remotely and most importantly, securely. When it comes to remote work from home and you need to get stuff done and security matters, you can definitely trust WebEx. Look, I know there are heads of state, governments, schools, hospitals that all trust WebEx. It is definitely my choice for secure video conferencing and collaboration. Oh, and another thing I love about WebEx, WebEx can do virtual happy hours and weddings too. That's right, hashtag life on WebEx. So if you can imagine it, WebEx can build the bridge to get you there.
And our next sponsor.
How Success Happens is brought to you by JustWorks. JustWorks is here to support the small business superheroes working hard to protect their companies and take care of their teams. With simple software and expert support for payroll, benefits, compliance, and HR, JustWorks takes some of the guesswork out of running a business in good times and bad. They know small business leaders wear many hats, and they're here to help you do it all. With JustWorks, you get seamless tools for managing remote teams and navigating new legislation. This includes scheduling, tracking, and staying compliant with new leave requirements from day one. Their dedicated team of certified HR consultants can help you navigate the ins and outs of managing remote teams in these challenging times. And should you or your team ever have any questions about your benefits or payroll, you can call JustWorks anytime. Really, anytime. 11 p.m. on Sunday? Sure. The round-the-clock support team is standing by. JustWorks is here for those who do it all. Learn more at justworks.com/success. That's justworks.com/success.
And we're back.
With the festival now, where is it? How are you guys going about that in these times? Have you added other types of experiences as well to the Sweetgreen brand?
So for years, we did the bigger festival in DC, I believe for 6 years. And then we started kind of at that point, the Sweetgreen had grown. We were, you know, we're now in 10 cities and states, and we wanted to start to bring some of that experience into a more localized community. So we started doing smaller music events. We did one in DC, we did one in California. And so the events for us have become more localized and more community-based. Maybe one day in the future, we'll bring back the big festival, but for now, we're really focused on these kind of connecting to each community individually. And again, we do that in lots of ways, not just with events and experience, but really thinking about whether it's some of these chef collaborations that allow us to tell stories around our supply chain and food, or other great partnerships. It's as we scale, we really are focused on still maintaining that sense of community in a really localized way.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I think of you guys as very community specific and centric, and going back to that board and learning where, you know, when I look at it in New York, it's a lot of stuff coming from upstate New York or New Jersey. You know, you really feel, you get that feel that this is a community driven business, even though you guys are national and growing, you know, exponentially right now, but you've been able to really maintain that, it seems like.
Yeah. And, you know, for us, as we think about this commitment to transparency, it's not a commitment to perfection or a commitment to having all the answers, because we're certainly not going to have all the answers and we're not going to get everything right. But we're super thoughtful about how we make all of our decisions, especially around the supply chain. And every year we look at those decisions and say, how can we make them better? So it's not about that board, and all of our transparency efforts are just around sharing the information with customers, but bringing them on that journey. You know, every year we try to make Sweetgreen better, invest more in our ingredients, and think about how we can support that supply chain in a deeper way. So again, for us, it's not about saying we have all the answers. You know, we're really confident and excited and proud of the supply chain we've built. And we work with some of the greatest farmers and producers and growers in the country. And it's something I wake up every day so proud of. But next year, the commitment is to make it better than it was this year.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that. It sounds like you guys have always been able to repurpose and redrive and grow and get better. And I think for any entrepreneur, I mean, everyone faces challenges, many challenges. The only way you grow from that or get better is if you take them on and you make changes. And it sounds like you guys have really been able to do that. One of the big challenges right now, which I'd love in the time we have left just to get back to, is, you know, we're going through this crisis right now. And as I told you, you're the first interview I've done in 2 months with a lot of people I spoke to. And a lot of those conversations were, a lot of it's irrelevant now in certain ways, and things have changed. For you going forward right now and focusing on what's going to be with Sweetgreen, where is your focus right now, aside from obviously everything you've done on the front lines and jumping into that, but where is your focus right now in terms of getting Sweetgreen through this and not only surviving, but thriving?
Our focus is on many things. You know, I would say first and foremost, our focus is really on really thinking about the new experience in our restaurants and on our app, but really thinking about the updated health and safety guidelines and how they're built into a whole new experience for our customers and team members. That's probably most important and top of mind. When we do start to reopen our front lines and bring our restaurants back to a closer sense of normal, what does that look like? How do we keep our team members safe, and how do we keep our customers safe and make sure that everyone feels good about reconnecting in our physical spaces? So that's been a huge point of focus. I think beyond that, you know, we look at the future vision for Sweetgreen and some of these parts of our business that we were going to work on or develop that were maybe 2 years away, 3 years away. And we kind of look at them and say, why not start working on them now? So, you know, rethinking so many parts of our strategy. And again, I feel very fortunate that the reality we were building towards is just here a lot quicker. This idea of, you know, we always believed Sweetgreen would be, our vision for Sweetgreen was to be a more digital platform with a broader menu. And this crisis has just forced us into that reality a lot quicker. Again, there's been a painful journey to that, and we've learned a lot, but it's allowing us to really think about how we can evolve and adapt quicker than we thought we could. And so many of the constraints that were around our business, to your point, the lines that were around the door, as much as it sounds like a good thing for us, we see that as friction, and, you know, a lot of customers don't want to deal with that. And it really, having that volume and a line out the door, you know, it creates some constraints where we can't work on certain things because we're trying to make sure that we can execute that model right and make sure to serve those customers. But our business is completely different today. So some of those constraints that were present 90 days ago aren't there today. So how do we just rethink what we're trying to build and maybe build it faster? And so even, you know, looking at our menu, we launched a whole new category of food, these hot dinner plates that we had been thinking about and slowly testing and thought we would roll out in 2021 at some point. And when this crisis hit, we looked around and listened to our customer and saw that people were at home eating more comforting foods and cooking more. And at some point, we believed that people would not want to continue to cook all their meals.
Definitely me.
Yeah, we wanted to continue listening and serving our customer. So we said, let's roll this out in 30 days. Something like that for a company our size, you know, it usually takes 9 to 12 months of proper testing and building the training materials and building the supply chain and all the different components. And the whole company came together and we said, if we all work on this together and drive towards this, let's do it in 30 days. And we launched it in 30 days and it's had a great impact on the business. It's, you know, the response from our customers have been great. Was it 100% perfect? No. Are we going to continue to evolve and iterate it? Yes.
Yeah, I love your idea for plates. I when I first heard of that, you know, just knowing and now trusting Sweetgreen so much because I do like to eat healthy, and especially, you know, one of the most amazing things I've seen is the only healthy thing my 12-year-old daughter wants to get or wants to eat is Sweetgreen, and she asks for it weekly, which is so amazing because the junk she eats and the junk she consumes, but it's so funny how that's how good it tastes. So you guys having these plates now, I just think is a great, great idea. With that and coming up with plates and saying, you know, you're pushing, I've seen a lot of businesses. I hope there's going to be a lot of better things coming out of this epidemic with businesses pushing ahead really quickly on projects. And it sounds like you did that with plates. Have you done it with other things that you said were kind of in the works and you were hesitating on, but other stuff for the business that you've kind of pushed forward and we'll see in the near future?
You know, in times of crisis, there's a ton of tragedy and have to acknowledge it. It's really going to be scary to see, you know, how many people and families and businesses come out of this and hopefully come out safely on the other side. But in times of crisis, there's also a ton of innovation and people are inventing things and creating new solutions and moving fast because the world is demanding it. And so I think it's exciting to see a lot of the innovation that's going to come out of this. We are definitely looking at all these ideas we had and things we wanted to build in the future and starting to think about them now. So whether it's part of our digital experience or more menu changes or thinking about physical formats, I would say Sweetgreen is going to continue to evolve, if not evolve way faster than it would have normally.
Yeah, no. And we all hope to see that as well. You know, we can't wait to get back to normal. I can't wait to get back and actually wait on a Sweetgreen line. So I know you guys are working on that, but it's such an incredible brand story. Nothing better than it's a kid from New York that's doing it. We could all, just wrapping up, I mean, we could all use some of your magic here. Some of these restaurants that I see that are suffering, I walk down the street. You're someone who understands this, having grown up in the business. I guess in closing, how do you see this coming out? Not so much for the, let's say, the Sweetgreens, but for some of these individually owned businesses that they're going to bring back and try and do a 25, 50% capacity. For me, I just don't see how that could work. But any thoughts on how you envision or what you believe might happen?
It's hard to really predict what's going to happen, but I would say, sadly, it pains me to say that I feel like some businesses are, you know, clearly going to not make it out of this and won't survive. I do think it will be different by city, by neighborhood, by region. You know, I think we're starting to see that around the country, different communities and cities are either reopening faster or responding differently. So, and again, it'll depend on, some businesses have the ability and the resources to evolve quickly and pivot their business model more than others. So it's really hard. I don't think there's going to be kind of like a blanket outcome. I think it's really going to be specific to different parts of the industry and different regions. But I remain hopeful. And then the one thing I'll say is that in this time, the sense of community has been stronger than ever in the restaurant and food landscape, whether it's distributors, farmers, restaurateurs. I mean, on a weekly basis, I talk to at least, you know, 10 to 15 other entrepreneurs in food or restaurateurs or chefs. And everyone is sharing ideas and thoughts and helping each other. And even a lot of these restaurants that are struggling for survival are still waking up every day and creating meals to feed those on the front lines. So I think it's been really inspiring to see how the whole industry has come together and reacted. And I hope we see as many people as possible make it through the end of this.
Yeah. And I bet good things will come out of that. And this, especially like you said, how I've seen people react to it. We had Danny Meyer on this program or before and seen what he's doing and some of these other folks. And it just seems like you said, there's this kind of brotherhood or community that you guys are all really pitching in and helping others, which maybe brings out a really good thing down the road for everyone in your business.
Yeah, agreed.
So listen, we appreciate coming on, especially in quarantine. And thank you for being my first interview virtual, not in a studio. I think it all worked out well, I hope. But Nicholas, awesome to see you and thank you most importantly for what you're doing for everyone on the front lines right now.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.